It was a risk for me to tell that story because it's not something they were expecting to hear, and it's certainly not one that was conventional. And why I'm telling you this now, Elizabeth, and why I included it in my book is I saw a monumental sea change in that room. That story moved them from their head to their heart, from thinking to feeling, from being scattered to being completely present. And it dawned on me at that moment how powerful it is for any of us to come out of the closet and tell our stories to each other, that they make a real difference.
Welcome to the Just In Time Cafe, Go Lean Six Sigma.com's official podcast, where we help you build your problem-solving muscles. We share best practices from over 20 years of success, helping organizations from the Fortune 500 to small and medium-sized business to government achieve their goals using Lean Six Sigma.
Well, hello, Elizabeth. How are you today?
I am great, Tracy. How about you?
I am doing wonderful. I'm ready for a coffee and a little chat with my bestie.
Aw, so sweet. Well, I think it's full on June. I'm going iced coffee. How about you?
That sounds great. I'll meet you in the dining room.
Meet you.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Just In Time Cafe. I'm Tracy O'Rourke, and this is Elizabeth Swan, and we are your hosts. It's great to be here, and I want to know what's on the menu today, Elizabeth.
I'm glad you asked, Tracy. Coming up for an appetizer, we've discovered an app that lets you create a visual workspace. We'll talk about that. On today's bulletin board, we're going to honor a member of our quality history who passed away recently. And then we're going to move on to find out what happens when you let sailors out of the box. For Tools of the Trade, we're going to cover a book that demonstrates that stories are not just for bedtime anymore. And today's special request is from a learner who wants to know the best way to go about firing your boss. And then for today's special, we've got an interview with an innovation master who once asked, "What would Santa do?"
I'm so looking forward to this.
Okay, up next then, it's the appetizer.
Okay, Elizabeth, so what is this app that lets you visualize work?
So this is an app by the name of Mural, and it's a shared workspace. So this goes in your browser. It comes with ready-made templates, so you could do things like storyboarding, Kanban boards, figuring out work plans, projects. It's very intuitive. It's got shortcuts. Like I was putting post-it notes in a Kanban board. I shared it with you. We worked out the to-dos and what was going to happen for this podcast. And every time I went to create a post-it note, it said, "Hey, just double-click and a post-it note will appear." So that was intuitive. I figured it out fairly quickly. It let me install it through Google, so I didn't have to create a separate logon. I was considering using it for my own personal Kanban, right? My own personal work plan, because I don't have any wall space left, right? So this was like a nice sort of online visual board. It was built by guys trying to collaborate on gaming, right? So they're figuring out how to design games. But that means, yeah, and that means they're using lean, agile tools. So you've got those Kanban boards, you've got five ways. There's a lot of things in there that are for them, but can be adapted, like storyboarding that you could use for process mapping, things like that. So good collaboration whiteboard for remote teams. I think that's the big deal here is this is for remote teams. And that's just a fact of modern living, right? Teams are remote. The pricing is $12 a month per person, but you and I got that 30-day free trial. So what'd you think about it?
You know, I really liked it as well. I think that it seems very simple, user-friendly. It did remind me a lot of PowerPoint. And then it made me think, well, how is this different than PowerPoint? And because I am a whiz at that, and if I'm going to invest time and money to learn a new app, I want to see value. So,
right.
But I think what's really great about this app is that kind of what you had mentioned is it's virtual. It's a virtual space that people can co-collaborate from all over wherever they are. And PowerPoint doesn't necessarily do that. PowerPoint is really more, you have to use like GoToMeeting to do some collaboration, and you still have limitations on having to send the doc to somebody to make adjustments, if you will. So this really creates more tools for virtual teams to use to be more creative. So I really like that. And it just seems simple, and it's really easy on the eyes. You know, that's the other thing about apps is sometimes things seem complicated and not intuitive, and this was very intuitive tool. So absolutely, I think this would be a great tool for teams to embrace, especially if they're using a lot of Google Docs, Google Sheets, because from our experience, Elizabeth, we know that PowerPoint doesn't work so great with Google Docs in terms of collaboration.
It doesn't. And I also liked, to your point, how visual it is. Like, you can throw YouTube clips in here. You can throw graphics. Like, it's really easy to use the visual aspect. So that's both fun and useful. Next up is the bulletin board.
So, Elizabeth, sounds like we've lost a lion in the quality legacy recently, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, Tracy. Michael Harry passed away April 25th. So it'd be good to reflect on what he added to the Lean Six Sigma catalog of knowledge. And he's famous for his collaboration with Bill Smith. He was the Motorola engineer who came up with the method and title, you know, Six Sigma, a way to count defects, a new way to count defects. And a new method. And Michael Harry worked with him. Michael Harry gave it up to him. People would often call Michael Harry the father of Six Sigma. And he'd say, no, Bill Smith was the father of Six Sigma. I was the godfather. So I kind of like that because there's a little bit of danger there too. So he was the godfather. He helped document the method and he helped build Lean Six Sigma training. Six Sigma training. This was before Lean was added in. And he made it accessible to Motorola employees. And then, of course, you and I know that spread to GE and other places that impacted our lives. And they worked on DMAIC, which was originally MAIC, right? Measure, analyze, improve, and control. And then define got added later when they realized, hey, we got to really be clear on what the heck the problem is that we're solving and who we're solving it for. But what I like is that he added belt levels, this whole martial arts piece that some people have an issue with. But what's helpful about it is it indicates the level of knowledge and ability. So people have learned more, they've passed exams, things like that. And that's just helpful for organizations trying to figure out where to slot people, how many people of what knowledge level they need. And I think what was also nice about his approach is that he saw Six Sigma early on as flexible, that you provide the tools needed for the effort. And that made DMAIC a great structure to be an umbrella for other tools, other methods from, you know, the world of quality, you know, not just Lean, but there's a lot of fathers of quality out there. I wish there were more mothers of quality, but
me too.
I know, we're working on it. But anyway, we are indebted to him. So we wanted to just thank him.
Yes, thank you, Michael Harry, for all of your contributions, for putting a path forward for many people in continuous improvement. We appreciate all of your contributions, and we're going to miss him.
We are. We're going to miss him. So, Tracy, what happens when you let sailors out of the box?
Well, a lot can happen, as a matter of fact. And in this particular situation, we had some Navy officers and sailors go through Lean Six Sigma Greenbelt training. And these officers were specifically working on the aircraft carrier USS George Washington. And they are using Lean Six Sigma practices to improve workflow due to changes that have occurred over the years, and also looking to improve processes to reduce inventory loss and become more efficient with offloading equipment. So Awesome job, Navy. And I will say that in my experience in working at San Diego State and UCSD, we actually do have quite a few Navy people coming through the programs. And it's really exciting to see some of the projects that they're working on. I had a Navy SEAL dive instructor in my class recently who wanted to reduce variation on how the dive instructors were passing or failing Navy SEALs. And so that was just a really interesting process and project to see, and so many others. I also had another Navy officer come through who needed to reduce the cycle time or lead time on deployments for missions. And of course, me just asking questions, because that's what we do. So what kinds of missions? And he said to me, well, if I tell you, I'd have to kill you.
Again, a little bit of danger makes it interesting.
A little bit of danger. So I didn't ask those kinds of questions anymore.
You're a wise woman. You're listening to the Just in Time Cafe podcast. I'm Elizabeth Swan, speaking here with Tracy O'Rourke. Up next, it's Tools of the Trade.
So what makes you think stories aren't just for bedtime anymore, Elizabeth?
Well, it's because I read this month's book, which is called Storytelling at Work. And that's by Mitch Ditkoff. He's an author, public speaker, innovation consultant. And he realized through the writing of his book that stories play a huge role in his work and his life. And first off, I would say it's 265 pages, but I read it in two sittings, or lyings, since you know I do my reading at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. and the structure, I know. No, I actually, it's interesting to me. Structure makes it easy to pick up. Anywhere. It's individual stories. And at the end of each, he talks about what he took away. So each incident either moved him or shifted his thinking in some way. And he's worked with, you know, big time Fortune 100 companies. He's worked with, you know, AT&T, Pfizer, Pricewaterhouse. You see mentions throughout of where he's, you know, brought storytelling in. But it's a reminder that we live in this world of facts and data, right? Process improvement. He's brought in sort of in the improvement and design and innovation side of it. But, you know, it's even more critical to bring our right side of our brains, our stories into the work. That's what people hear. It's what they remember. It's what makes a difference for them. So I love that after each story, he asks us, the reader, kind of provocative questions. Like, what are you not doing? What question should you be answering with no instead of yes? You know, it really makes you sit in and think a bit about it. So I love that about it. How about you, Tracy? What did you get out of it?
You know, I really enjoyed the book immensely, and I loved his stories. I loved the format of his stories too. I think sometimes, well, for me anyways, I have lots of stories, but I don't have them written down, and I haven't fine-tuned them, and I haven't really thought through many of the stories that I have over my life, both personally and professionally. So what really struck me is he has roughly, 38 stories in here that he shares, and I love the format of the so what and now what. At the end of every story, he basically says, well, so what? That's my story, but so what? What does that mean? And he goes into what that meant for him and then what next. And that's when he had that provocative question, as you mentioned, Elizabeth. And it really, they're great questions. And every time I read one of those questions, I had this surge of many stories that I probably could articulate to answer that question. And so after the end of this book, I sat there thinking that I have so many untold stories that could help others learn Lean Six Sigma, that could help others apply things when things got challenging, that, you know, where I've seen project teams fail and then overcome failure and be successful that I'm not telling. And so it was a true inspiration to really think about what are the stories that I'm not telling that could help others learn based on what I do for a living? So I really, really enjoyed it immensely. And the other thing is, how many other people feel exactly like me? They have thousands of stories that are being untold. And it's listening to stories is so much more inspirational than listening to facts and data for many. you know, they say that that is one way humans have communicated since the dawn of time, which is telling stories. And now in this age, it's so almost forgotten a little bit because we're so focused on data and facts, and that this art is being lost even. So yeah. I really enjoyed the book, and it really made me have a paradigm shift in how I'm communicating with people, not just in my personal life, but professionally, you know, with students and with learners and with our audience.
And I think you probably have the same experience that I do at the end of a workshop, or when you look at comments after a webinar. What you hear are people saying, I really like the stories. I really appreciate the examples, which are mini stories. So we're getting that feedback all the time.
We do, yes. And you're absolutely right. So there's just proof that, yes, this is a wonderful way to communicate and for people to understand and learn. So you're listening to the Justin Heim Cafe podcast. I'm Tracy O'Rourke. In just a short while, we're going to hear Elizabeth's interview with Mitch Ditkoff about storytelling. But first, it's a special request, the Q&A from one of our subscribers.
Tracy, here's a question from one of our subscribers. How do you fire a project sponsor?
How do you fire a project sponsor? That is a great question. And unfortunately, you know, I really hope nobody has to have that situation, because you would hope that a sponsor would do what they should be doing for a project leader or a project team. And, you know, I really empathize with the person that is actually even pondering this question, because it's not a great place to be. So there's lots of ways that you could fire a project sponsor. I would even say, are you sure? You know, that's the first question. Are you sure this isn't working out? Is it really just because they don't know what to do? Or is it because they are just not, they know what to do, but they're not doing it. You're just not getting the support that you need. So I'd really just start to think through some of those things and, you know, making sure that you have a conversation with the sponsor first to make sure that there is an understanding there. But if it's multiple iterations that the sponsor has failed in terms of support, then yeah, I think that finding another sponsor that might be more well suited for the project is a good approach. Elizabeth, what do you think?
Yeah, this one's tough, because once again, you always want to ask, what's the situation here? I can't just give blind advice. But if, as you say, there's multiple efforts and they've really failed, one method I've seen work is approach the sponsor with the idea of offloading this time-consuming work of sponsoring a project to someone with more bandwidth. I love that corporate term. What's your bandwidth? Everyone has limited bandwidth. So, you know, appeal to the idea that they're probably overloaded and could use a break. And that might just be a good way to lay open the opportunity for that person to opt out and let somebody else step in. So it might be just a graceful way to bring that about. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good approach, is just to say, I'm actually discovering that this person might be a better sponsor, and here's some of the reasons why. And hopefully it's related to the project as well. I mean, they're in a better position, or they have more time, just as you say. I think that's a great way to switch out a sponsor. Up next, it's today's special, which is Elizabeth's interview with Mitch Ditkoff, CEO of Idea Champions, who once asked, what would Santa do? Elizabeth, do you know the answer to that?
Yes, that is one of Mitch's great stories of how he managed to drum up work by visiting past clients in the guise of Santa Claus. I felt like it was Santa bombing. He Santa bombed his clients, which was ultimately successful. So Mitch has won Innovation Blogger of the Year 2 years running. And in this interview, we delve into his favorite stories and more. So coming next.
I am all ears for this interview.
Welcome, everybody, to today's special. Today, I am speaking with Mitch Ditkoff. Mitch is co-founder and president of Idea Champions, an innovation consulting and training company that was founded in 1987. He is the author of 2 award-winning books, Awake at the Wheel and Storytelling at Work. He's creator of Conducting Genius, one of the few brainstorm facilitation trainings in the world. Innovation Blogger of the Year, 2 years running. He's co-founder of Face the Music, the first interactive corporate blues band. Creator of Free the Genie, a deck of innovative sparking cards. Creator of Wisdom Circles, small group storytelling sessions. He lives half the year in Woodstock, New York, and half the year in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico. And I like this. He has asked more than 10,000 people where and when they get their best ideas. So in the interest of total transparency, I have to say that I worked for Mitch at Idea Champions for about a year, about two decades ago. And recently, I was searching for some good creativity quotes, and I found what seemed like the best collection I'd ever seen. And when I looked to see what website I'd stumbled on, it was Idea Champions. So I saw that Mitch had written a book about storytelling at work. I bought it immediately, and here we are. So, Mitch, Storytelling at Work, which I told you I loved, is a series of short stories where you were moved or resulted in a shift in your thinking, which is a really nice model. You can pick that book up anywhere, and it's and happen upon a teaching moment. Do you have a favorite of those stories, or is there a new one that took place after the book came out that you wish you had included or been able to?
Great question. I do have some favorites in the book, and I'm in the process of writing the follow-up book. So another wave of stories are being written and articulated. In that book, depends on my mood, but one that really stands out was the story of the Afghani cab driver and the $250 million salty snack food. Is this a time to tell it, or should I?
No, go ahead so our listeners can hear.
Okay, I'll keep it real simple. I was working as an outside consultant for General Mills, trying to help them come up with an idea for a $250 million salty snack food that was not a potato chip. And I get in the cab in the morning to go to their headquarters to set up the room and, you know, begin the day and meet with their product development people. On the ride over, I noticed that my cab driver has a very long name on the dashboard with a lot of consonants and no syllables. It dawned on me that he was probably from another country. So I casually asked him where he was from, and he paused, and then he said Afghanistan. That was a time when we were deeply immersed in the Afghanistan war. And I had a moment in the back seat where it was like, oh my God, I've got a cab driver who probably hates Americans. And I'm a businessman riding in the back seat, being taken, you know, to a fancy headquarters. This is not going to go well. And I had to choose whether to continue talking with him or just kind of invert and look at my notes. I decided to engage him, and I asked him a very simple question: how is it that he came to live in America? And he told me the story of how he was walking in the mountains with his daughter. She was 10. She stepped on a landmine. And there was a big explosion. There was obviously a big injury. And he went, he ripped his shirt off. He tied it around her bleeding leg as a tourniquet, went looking for medical help. There was no medical help because everybody had bailed out of the area. It was such a bombed out area. And he spent basically 3 days wandering the countryside, being taken care of by villagers, tending to her. Her slipping in and out of consciousness. Finally, he stumbles across an outpost of Mayo Clinic nurses who take her in, save her life, fly her to Minnesota to the clinic there, where they then fly him and his wife the following day to be with his daughter for the surgery. She spends a year in rehabilitation. She's fitted for a prosthetic leg, et cetera, et cetera. He decides to stay in America. And at that moment, we arrive at the headquarters of General Mills. And I am in an altered state listening to this man's story. He's totally taken me out of my normal mindset as I prep for a brainstorming session. And I have been transported to another world with this man, and we bonded big time as he really revealed everything about that moment in great detail. I get out of the car to pay him. We hug. We bow to each other. I go into the building with its marble desk and its tiled floors and its, you know, fancy decor, and go up to the room where I'm going to lead the session. And I have to decide, am I going to tell this story to everyone to begin the day, or do I just dismiss it as a curious, surreal beginning of my day, but it has no effect on anyone else? So that was my moment of truth. Like, do I stuff it or do I change gears and tell the story of how I got to this room this morning? And I decided to go for it. I told the story. The room was filled with, you know, a bunch of millennials, hyper-caffeinated, texting, distracted people. And it was a risk for me to tell that story because it's not something they were expecting to hear, and it's certainly not one that was conventional.
Yeah.
And why I'm telling you this now, Elizabeth, and why I included it in my book is I saw a monumental sea change in that room.
Mm.
That story moved them from their head to their heart, from thinking to feeling, from being scattered to being completely present.
Mm.
And it dawned on me at that moment how powerful it is for any of us to come out of the closet and tell our stories to each other, that they make a real difference. We did the work that day. You know, we did the work of, you know, ideating salty snack food products, which was kind of a funny, you know, addition to how the day began. But what I noticed was the change of mindset, the change of receptivity, the change of vulnerability, the feeling of community and connection in that room. And all of it was birthed or sparked by the story that I told.
Yeah.
That's just one of the reasons why I'm so onto the storytelling thing these days, especially in organizations.
So that's huge. And for someone that also works in front of groups, that shift you just talked about is huge, and that we all are dealing with very distracted, inattentive people based on the way people live now. It has nothing to do with us personally, and I know you know that too. So that is a great teach point for me too, just feeling like, what is that story? How do we bring presence into the room? Because without it, you know, even if it's just salty snack foods, you know, you can't get to the real work. And I like that a lot. That was great. Another thing that struck me reading your stories was something you call tacit knowledge, that yeah. companies have a treasure trove of information that is constantly walking out the door when employees leave. So can you say more about how storytelling can help stem that tide of knowledge loss?
Absolutely. I'll begin with the phrase tacit knowledge, which is really a meme for the most difficult to communicate essence of what a person knows. Call it wisdom, even beyond knowledge. And that is something that years ago, when people worked with a master tradesman, let's say, in a guild, and they wanted to learn the craft of being a jeweler or a silversmith or a carpenter or a builder of any kind, you work side by side with that master tradesman and learned by a kind of osmosis process. You weren't given a YouTube video to watch. You weren't given an instruction manual. Often you weren't even told what to do. It's like, just work alongside the master and get it in your bones, in your cells, in a way that communicates some great level of skill and ability that is not easily communicatable in language, or certainly in the classic ways in which training happens these days in the world. So tacit knowledge often goes out the door. When people leave an organization, they've been there for years, they take with them all of this buried wisdom of how things get done, how things work, the hard to communicate essence of that organization, the culture, the real mastery and mystery of making miracles. Stories, although they are codified, and one thing about tacit knowledge is that it's not codifiable. So you can't turn it into a book per se or a manual, but stories, at least in the oral tradition, have a way of delivering essence, have a way of delivering a deeply held knowing or knowledge that is not easily communicated, but the story becomes the conveyor of that wisdom or that knowledge. So while technically speaking, storytelling is not tacit knowledge, because tacit knowledge cannot be put into words. If you're going to put something into words, I do believe, based on the last 25 years of working with organizations, that the form in which the words take a story is the most powerful way to transfer knowledge.
And do you work with groups to try to get at those essential stories?
I do. And that's the hokey pokey. because at the higher octave of what I'm onto, you might call it eternal wisdom. And there are very few companies who are calling me saying, "Oh, I heard you were the eternal wisdom guy." Usually it's like, "Oh, you're the creative thinking guy," or "You're the innovation guy." Okay, I can start there. But when it's time to deliver results and how you get people out of their mind and out of their habits and out of their routines and into a space of fresh thinking, that's where the stories come in. And I try to find ways to weave the storytelling into sessions I do, even if the session is not called a storytelling session, and they're often not. It'd be called applied innovation or culture of innovation or breakthrough thinking. That's fine. That's the what, but the how, where the real bang for the buck often is, above and beyond the techniques that I teach and the facilitation skills that I have, is in the telling of the story and then the unpacking or the deconstructing of the story so that the listeners get the essence of what's hiding in the story and then apply it to their own life.
I know people in the knowledge management field, and I feel like this is a little more of the magic dust, right? That is not part of creating a manual, trying to just log information straight because the stories are so much more compelling. So you're onto something here. I think this is great. And I feel like it really could help that whole field. But we'll come back to that. You have a lot of great quotes, as I initially discovered, having rediscovered you through quotes. You talk about listening, and you observe what you call conversational endurance, right? And this, which is such an apt phrase, and I have another colleague who called it, his phrase was, "The opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting to talk."
No.
Isn't that great?
That
So
is.
this is all too true. So one of your stories that also shifted my thinking, which is to treat stories like fine pieces of music, which is such a great way of framing it, that we should listen to them over and over. Can you say more about that?
Absolutely. Well, this goes way back to my father, who was a great storyteller, and it's really how he communicated what he knew to me. But as an adolescent, or even as a young adult, I would often respond by his, to his telling of a story with the eye roll, and the "Dad, you've told me that story 20 times. Here we go again." It's like enough already with the story. But it took until my early 50s to wise up and realize that there was something in his stories that were amazingly deep and amazingly memorable and amazingly meaningful. If I could just pull away from that father-son kind of reactive mode and really get the fact that in those stories were nuggets, buried gold, pieces of wisdom that were communicated via story, that I would have a treasure trove of insight and wisdom to get. So at that point, once I finally understood that, I began to listen to his stories in the same way that I listened to Mozart or Beethoven. You don't just listen to Beethoven's Ninth once, or a sonata once, or a favorite Beatles song once. They don't, it's like, "Oh, I already heard yesterday. I've already heard Sgt. Pepper's. Please get over it." Those songs, or Neil Young's, "Harvest Moon," you could listen to them forever because every time you hear them, it puts you in a kind of a mood or a mindset. It shifts you. You feel something. It reminds you of something. And that's what stories can do, especially when stories are told well.
That helped me in. Didn't even realize I was using stories in my work, when I was training and running workshops, until evals would come back and I'd see again and again, "Oh, such good stories. The stories really help." Or, and there were moments where I thought, "Oh, I've used that story so many times. I need to retire it." But then I'd think, "But it was great. It really told that point. It made that." So then I thought, well, maybe what I need to do is refine it, work on it, treat it like you're saying the piece of music and give it its due. Don't make it rote. Don't let it be rote.
Exactly. And Elizabeth, your discovery and mine are very, very similar because 5 years ago, somebody asked me what I did for a living. And I opened my mouth and I said kind of my canned rap, which it sounded like a canned rap. Maybe to them it sounded good, but to me it was like, oh, please, that's my Vegas act, you know. I've said that so many times. And they kept looking at me and I kept thinking, like, what do I do? And after they left, I got really curious to think about, what do I really do? I know what I say I do.
Yeah.
But what do I really do if you lift the curtain a little bit? And what about what I do works? And I started to kind of pull it apart, almost like the periodic table of elements. Think about all the pieces of the pie when I lead a workshop or run a training or do a keynote. What actually is that composed of that gets people into a space where they go, that was great. Everyone should go through this. And I realize of all the things I know how to do and all the things I like to do, the biggest, most powerful, memorable response was when I told a story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God. And it was like, you know, like the white arrow in the FedEx logo.
Which I just found. I just found based on you.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
So that's a perfect example. That's a background foreground shift. That arrow has been in the logo ever since it was created. Most people never see it. It's the white space. It's the negative space. Their mind goes to what's obvious, the colors, the shapes, and so forth. They miss the arrow, which was built in by the designer to represent forward movement, because that's what FedEx does.
Yeah.
And in our communications, certainly yours, you just acknowledged that, and mine as well, that hidden arrow. One way of defining that hidden arrow can be the stories that we tell to make the point or reinforce the message or to set things up. And many years later, Elizabeth, when people seek you out or they find you, they may say, oh, I remember the story you told about the cover.
Yeah.
But they don't say, I remember your PowerPoint show or, you know, I remember your handouts or whatever.
Right. Sadly, no. Yeah, there's a phrase you actually use for yourself that I think is very apt. You called yourself an innovation provocateur, and I think that sums you up, Mitch. So, tell me what's next for you? What are your latest interests?
Well, my latest interest is this topic and finding a way to get this power of storytelling out into the world. And I'm certainly not the only one doing it. There's a long history going all the way back to the Stone Age. And there are some really great people that are onto this topic. I'm adding my flavor to it. But to find a way to get companies that are interested in innovation and change and creative thinking to understand the power of storytelling towards that end. So I'm looking for ways to translate what I know into ways that clients or companies see the value and are willing to devote some time and some money to make it real. So that's one thing. And the second thing, the flip side of the coin, because that's the group thing, that's the organizational thing. The flip side of the coin is my work with individuals in a service which I'm calling Follow Your Muse, which is one-on-one, usually over the phone. And it's for anybody with a powerful idea, a powerful vision, a powerful creative impulse, who feels they need a goose, a coach, a mentor, some way to get it out of their head and into the world, that I'm playing that role for people. I've done that with clients. I'm doing it for people that are not organizational people, and that includes what you might call the cultural creatives or people that are entrepreneurs without a big budget behind them, powerful idea they want to see manifest, but they keep spinning their wheels. That's the other piece of it as well.
Nice, nice. Great, great, great guidance. And then just as a wrap up, aside from stumbling upon your site while looking for good quotes, how can people find you online?
Well, there's two ways. There's MitchDitkoff.com, which is my own personal website. And then there's ideachampions.com, and that's the company I started and you worked with for a while. Those are probably the two best places, and my blogs and other related social media platforms will all be accessible via either one of those sites.
Awesome. And thank you, Mitch. It's been such a pleasure reconnecting, and I look forward to more connections.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate you inviting me into this.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for tuning in today to the Just in Time Cafe. Please tune again next month when we have a whole new slew of apps and books and great folks to talk to. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for Just in Time Cafe. Visit GoLeanSixSigma.com/podcast to share your feedback or listen to more podcasts. Also, please subscribe to Just in Time Cafe on iTunes.